A very warm welcome to this World Game Changers podcast, where your host, Paul D. Lowe, embraces many crucial conversations that compassionately contribute towards creating a better life and world. Paul's intention is very simple, to help get people's inspirational insights and motivational messages out into the world so others may benefit.
Hello, World Game Changers, and welcome back to this podcast episode where today I'm joined by two Garys, Gary Clark and Gary Harris. And this is in the mini-series of The Second Greatest Story Ever Told. So what's that got to do with what we're going to be talking about, football? Well, what it's got to do with football is we were led to believe, and certainly I know I speak for the other two Garys, and they'll come on and speak for themselves in a moment, of course, but we were led to believe it's the beautiful game. And I'm not so sure that it is still the beautiful game. So, without further ado, Gary C first. Let's go, Gary Clark. Let's go in alphabetical order. Gary, warm welcome to you.
All right, Paul. How are you doing, Gary? All right, mate.
Yep, all's good. And then Gary Harris.
Hi, mate. You're right.
All's good. Here. The tale of the two Garys, listeners. The tale of the two Garys. So, gentlemen, this whole concept about the second greatest story ever told and the beautiful game. Let's start with, you know, with this question: is it still the beautiful game?
Not so sure these days, mate. I've lost that loving feeling. Like we've just been talking about it, Paul. I fell back in love with football a couple of years, obviously because of the non-league, but Forest getting to the Premier League, you know, sharing that story, that journey with my son, it was fantastic. But I was at Sheffield United on Saturday, as it happens, and met me a couple of mates from Sheffield United, and they told me 2 years ago, because they went up a couple of years back, didn't they? And they pre-warned me, it's not what it's made out to be. You can't get tickets. You know, it's all about Billy Big Bollocks, excuse the language. They didn't like it. And even this week, I went to meet them. And beforehand, I put a post up with my tickets off to Sheffield, blah, blah, blah. And my Sheffield United mate went straight away, hope you win. And I went in the pub afterwards and met some Sheffield United lads, and they said they're glad to get back in the Championship. They can't stick that Premier League. They told me 2 years back, and they're all saying the same thing. They hate it. They actually hate it. It's great for the first year, just going back to them grounds, Anfield and Old Trafford and the Emirates, taking your boy and sharing that's journey. Like, you know, I quite enjoyed last season. It wasn't bad. We struggled, but it was another great season where we stayed up on the last day. But this year, it's just got worse and worse and worse. And the reason that I only still go is because of my lad. He wants to go. If he didn't want, you know, he even said to me yesterday, Dad, he says, oh, we won't bother with so many away games next year. So I think he's losing that loving feeling as well with 14. You know what I mean? It's money. No, they couldn't care about the fans. You know, they're not bothered, not interested. I know he said beforehand, the hospitality price hasn't even come out yet. Last season, my mate had a box. It was 21,000 the year before. Fair play. Forest kept it at championship prices for the first season because they're frozen. I think a lot of people returned the season tickets in COVID. We stuck with the club and paid it. And we didn't watch no football for a year. But the boxes went up from 21,000 to 51,000 in one season. I mean, what company does that, you know, that increase? What line of business does that increase? Another mate of mine's box went up, that more than doubled. We're waiting for the prices on hospitality. I had a season ticket in the Legends Lounge for 8-10 years. It was 800 the year we got promotion. I think they kept it at 800 last season. Fair play to them for doing that. And then all of a sudden it went up to £1,800, a £1,000 increase. You know, in a year, how can you do that? What's that? Mm. You know, what's you know, and we're waiting for the prices this year. Them Legends Lounge, 1800. It won't surprise me if the 2,500, 2,300 this year, but God knows what the boxes are going to go up to. I mean, I've heard a rumour on the grapevine, the big box in the middle that Fowler had when he was in charge of our club. He used to have it himself. There's 20 seats in there, but it was £90,000 last season. It's gone up to £180,000. But they're not bothered, you see. There's a waiting list on season tickets, £11,000, £10 a pop. They brought that out just before they brought the prices out for the normal season tickets in the stand. They've gone up. They took out the next generation. Last season, if you were 17 to 19, you get a season ticket for £100. Now, they've stopped that age gap, and it's gone up to £700. So if you're an apprentice or a young lad just starting out and working life, and you're now 17 to 19, paying £100 last year, you've got to fork out £700 for your season ticket next season. So they're going to lose a generation of fans here, unless your dad's going to pay, or you get a loan or something. They're going to go to Mansfield Town or non-league. It might benefit Carlton Town, actually, Notts County. You know
so,
what I mean?
Gary H, we spoke about this a few weeks ago off air, didn't we? Around the three C's, the cash, and obviously Gary has just spoke about the cash element, the cash, the culture and the corruption. Let's focus in on this, Gary H. Can you relate to this as a Watford supporter? Because they've had a recent spell in the Premier League, haven't they? Have you?
Oh, yeah. As a Watford supporter, I can relate to it because I lost interest, totally disillusionized with everything in football. And that's not just Watford. You know, to be fair, Watford keep their prices sensible, if I'm honest, but I just, everything else went with the package of, particularly when we were in the Premier League. And obviously, but as a Watford support is one thing, but obviously, as you know, I do have a platform called Proper Football, and we do podcasts on a weekly basis, and we have an ex-player with us, and we have guests and whatever else, and some grand oppers on, and the insight we get is probably better than most. So, and from that perspective, it's like opened up a world of absolute, what's the word I'm looking for? Betrayal. And there ain't another word. I don't think they betrayed what was a working class sport. Gary, when we were on the terraces, you know, the corporate side of it was very minimal. I'm not saying it shouldn't be corporate, but they betray working class people. It's all about money. Like Gary was saying about the costs for the corporate side in Forest, Fulham, outrageous costs in their new stands as well. You know, there's so many things that have betrayed the fan. There are many, many groups of fans that are pulling away from their clubs. There's a group of Arsenal fans pulled away, and we interviewed them, and they formed their own club. For the life of me, I can't remember the name of the club now, but I did interview them. And the reason they pulled away was they'd worked out that the Arsenal scandal on the membership fees. And they'd worked out that they were selling these membership fees at X amount of money, and yet you couldn't get a ticket through the membership. And they reckon they'd worked out with the amount on, and they'd done a bit of research, that the club had made £18 million out of this membership scheme, of which the majority of the fans couldn't even get a ticket. And you know, we're hearing it at every club. You know, we talk to a lot of ground oppers, and they talk to a lot of non-league fans. They ground up the non-league, really. And it's the same story everywhere you go. You're seeing an exodus into non-league because everyone's disillusionized. So is it a beautiful game? The answer's no. And there's so much more we could talk about that's destroying the game, you know, and the betrayal. It's betrayal. It really is. Betrayal of the fan, because you're no longer a fan. You're a customer.
Mm. So what's the answer then, chaps? What is the answer? And I know I'm oversimplifying with this, you know, this question. To bring the game back to the people. I can remember years ago, I think it was Brian Moore with Cluffy, and Cluffy, in his own inimitable way, was giving Brian Moore a little bit of a...
I think we ought to have a look at the Bundesliga.
Yeah, if I can just finish this, Gary, if I can. And Brian Moore was interviewing Cluffy, and Cluffy reminded him how powerful the media was. I mean, Brian Moore, what we're going back to, 70s here, middle, late 70s. And Cluffy reminded him that the game belongs to the people. It's our industry, not yours, not mine, but ours. And I think what's definitely, and I'm not as involved with the game as you two guys, nowhere near, but I personally feel the injustice of a sport that I grew up with. It saved my life, literally. It saved my life. So I'm still, as much as I've tried to deny it, I'm still passionate about this beautiful game. But it's been taken away from us. So I just sort of say to you then, chaps, what's the answer? How do we start to bring it back? And if I can just plant a seed to try and answer my own question, that for me, and I've said this to you, Gary H., you know, you do amazing stuff through the Proper Football Channel. Amazing. And I'm sure that there are other platforms that do similar parallel work. But from my understanding, and please challenge and correct me on this, they're kind of siloed. But what if we could bring everybody together and create one big voice? And I'll leave it there. Invite any thoughts?
Well, like I said, one is have a look at the Bundesliga, what they're doing in Germany, the Bayern Munich owner. But they're not. They won't do it, will they? Because it's Premier League, and all they're bothered about is Premier League. Mm. You know, and the money coming in from all around the world. You know, I said to you a few years ago during COVID, we'll be playing games in China and Bangkok soon. You know, Liverpool will be playing Man United. 3 or 4 games a season to start off with. Right, this game is going to be in Bangkok. But it's been live around the world with that much money. And they're not interested in the fans, the Premier League aren't. They're not bothered. You know, they don't put anything back into lower league football, do they? Do they? Ask me. You know, tell me. Do they? I don't know. I don't see anything coming back in, do you?
No. The leagues are too top-heavy financially, aren't they? I mean, yeah. Look at the amount of money in the top end and then the amount of money in the lower end. It's ridiculous. Even this week, a crazy situation. And I hear this all the time. Clubs asking to be relegated. Now, what world is that from? This is in the non-league now I'm talking, just highlighting the lack of money in non-league.
That's clubs, right.
It was Loughborough Dynamos.
Loughborough Dynamos, wasn't it?
Yeah, and obviously they had the best ever season, finished 6th in the league, and it saved Rushden and Diamonds. There's another club that have fallen foul to the way football is, but they were going to get relegated and they're now not. But I hear this every season now.
Well, the same thing happened to us last season, didn't it, Gary? The North Shields.
Dreadful, yeah.
You know, gave them a year to get the ground upgraded, but didn't have the money.
Yeah.
You know, one of these bigger clubs, Newcastle or Sunderland, well, probably Newcastle more than Sunderland, but why don't Newcastle step in? You know, here's 100 grand, get your ground upgraded. You know, they've got relegated.
I mean, I say quite regularly on my podcast that at the end of the day, the likes of Bury and clubs like that have fallen foul to the financial strain that is in the lower end of football, probably one player's week's wages from Manchester United would have saved
that.
Yeah. 1 week's wages would have saved that club. It's just money's killing. Paul, I really don't think we're going to get the game back as we know it. I don't think that's possible. I think there's far too much money in there. The only thing I may be seeing is there will become a very much a separation from them, either the big clubs going off into some sort of European league and then reformat the English Football League in a new format without maybe 6 or 7 of the big clubs. I can't see that being any other way, because there is no way that we're going to get that back with the amount of money at that top end. It's just crazy.
Well, it's 3 leagues now anyway, isn't it? It's the Premier League is basically 3 leagues. The top 6, you know, you've got the middle order, and then you've got probably 7 or 8 fighting relegation every season. you know, obviously the three that always come up are going to be struggling. You might get one in a blue moon, one in a blue moon that does well.
I completely agree with you on that. I've been saying for a while now that I think the Premier League will become extremely elite in that the gap is going to get that big. The three will come up, they will come down, go up, come down, go up, come down. And the elite will become the Premier League. And who sits in that, I don't know. You know, I don't know. But it's betrayal. There's no other word for it. Honestly, it's an absolute betrayal of the true football fans in this country, you know. Not the prawn sandwich brigade who it's, let's take the company guests out and all that. You know, the true fans, week in, week out, going to Wigan on a Wednesday night, going Swansea on a Monday. We've all done that, you know, in the rain, Stoke City in the rain and midweek. And they're the true fans and they're the ones that are being betrayed. You can tell by the atmospheres now in the grounds. I mean, I will say Forest is an exception there. I think the atmosphere has been absolutely tremendous at the City Ground. But generally, you must have noticed with the away games you've been to, overall, the atmospheres in these grounds are
I went to Everton a couple of weeks ago. I turned around. I normally know 80% of the away support, the faces. And at Everton, I was in the top tier, but I hardly knew anybody. You know, I've been going 50 years this next season, and I hardly knew anybody in that crowd. You know, I know it's a younger generation, but, you know, people are, I don't know. It was strange, strange, really. And the atmosphere is not what it used to be at away games.
It's because it's a very much diluted fan base now. Yeah. I mean, the introduction, one of the nails in the coffin was the introduction of not the fact that it was all-seater stadium, but the fact that they introduced all-seater stadium as a must in the two top leagues, and then on top of that, introduced allocated seating. So it basically meant where you would get your crowds together, they'd get in early and have a knees, whatever, they really create the atmosphere because they would all be in one area behind the goal generally. Allocated seating took that all away because now everyone's split up around the ground and it's very hard then to get an atmosphere going. I know some clubs have tried to maybe do something about it, but not very successfully. And that was one of the nails in the coffin over atmosphere at our games. You know, there was an interview with a Bundesliga fan recently who goes around the world looking at different clubs. I can't remember what German club he supports. And he said, have you been over to the UK yet? And he went, no. He said, to be honest with you, it's not that appealing because there's no atmosphere.
True.
Know,
I mean, you go to Old Trafford and Anfield these days.
Yeah.
They're like morgues.
Anfield's supposed to be one of the cauldrons of atmosphere, and it certainly isn't. They do it for about five minutes.
It only is, if you notice, it's better on cup games because people have an opportunity normally midweek, and they don't, you know, they don't tend to get the usual people. There's more chance of getting a ticket for cup games.
The prices are normally a bit cheaper. Yeah. More affordable for the working class fan, which is what football was all about. You know, so more affordable. Plus, maybe you're not getting so many of the tourists diluting down the fan base because it's a cup game. You know, but I just want to say one last thing and I'll shut up. But I think the decision the other week was a massive nail in the coffin of the FA Cup replays.
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Just unbelievable that they did not consult anyone outside of the Premier League. And I wonder how much input the bottom half of the Premier League would have had on that as well.
Apparently, I've heard Forest voted for this. That's what I've heard. I don't know how true it is, but I've heard Forest voted for this.
I mean, it benefits the Premier League clubs. We can see that. And there are people that agree with it.
Well, it does, Gary, but they're saying, you know, there's too much football. But all of a sudden, they're going to fly for a pre-season friendly to China or Tokyo or something when they get the mid-season break or something. You know, when they get England, you know, and they're saying that it affects them because it's too much football and that's why they want the replays gone. But they're quick to jump on a plane to America for a big money
and
deal.
You've got this Club World Cup they're going to now all be entering.
Yeah. So that the two-faced.
It's greed. It's greed. You know, the fact that they had no discussion with anyone outside Premier League and then just bang it on. You know, we all know lower clubs, not just non-league, but lower clubs in general, they benefit from the replays in the Cup. The FA Cup keeps some of the non-league clubs alive if they have a little run, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, very well, it's just shown the elitism that has now become football and is, Paul, what is taking football away from us. It's the elitism and the betrayal of the normal, everyday fan.
We started...
And I don't know the answer to how we get it back. I don't think you'll ever get it back.
Right. Well, we'll hold that thought, Gary. Hold that thought. We'll come to that right at the end. But I alluded to at the top of this fascinating conversation, this very passionate conversation around the three C's, the cash. And I think we've just mildly flirted. I mean, we could do podcast after podcast just on the cash element alone. But let's park that. Let's move on to the culture. And another C, cheating. Now, I can remember a situation maybe four or five seasons ago when Forest played Leeds and West Brom. And there was a lot of cheating. I think it was Dwight Gale that did a swan dive. I mean, the Bolshire Ballet, if they'd have been watching, would have signed him up. And they got a last-minute penalty. Now, what my point is, in terms of the beautiful game and how it's changed, cheating, and I've even heard it said, and I don't know how true it is, but as part of the professional club's training, they actually, you know, they have part of the training sessions.
Say that. I'm sure the talk is.
You know, how to dive, don't make it too obvious, play for time. I actually, on behalf of the male species that's played competitive sport, I feel embarrassed for these guys that call themselves men. I feel embarrassed for them because they go down as if they've been shot. It's what kind of message does that send to our young people? You know, our kids that are watching, our grandkids are watching, and they want to get involved. So I just want to flirt very briefly, gentlemen, with the culture of the game. Any thoughts around this?
Well, I'll tell you a story. We had a cricket event on Friday night, and this ex-player, ex-umpire, was telling a great story about one of the questions was, what's the most dangerous or bravest thing you've seen in cricket? And he told a story about this guy. He didn't wear a helmet. And he got bounced, and he got one right in the face, and it took his fleet teeth out, knocked out, blood all over the wicket, straight to hospital. He had to have his jaw wired up, the whole everything. Next day, he come out batting again with an helmet, you know, and he turned around and says, he basically says, you know, you see all these players diving around in the Premiership, and they go down, like you just said, and Gary just said, like they've been shot, you know. I thought that was a great story.
Mm.
And he's not teaching the kids the right way, is it? You know, I'm sure you're right about, I think they taught it as well nowadays, you know, going off to a fine art.
Yeah, I think there's so much at stake for a club that they're probably encouraged to get a penalty. Not necessarily. I mean, the other side of it is when they go rolling over to try and get another player sent off. You know, the word sportsmanship has gone out of the game a little bit there. You know, you see it all the time. I've seen clips of players rolling around as if they've been shot, and then they'll get, and because they didn't get the free kick, they'll jump straight back up and they're back in it. Which just shows you that. That is cheating. That's cheating.
Well,
never
forget Ronaldo. Was it Ronaldo when he winked when he got Rooney?
Yeah. They all do it.
Yeah, he winks.
But to answer that, Paul, I think that element of trying to get another man sent off is such a bad influence on our younger generation because it is almost, you know, throwing mud in the face of what sports should be about. And that is sportsmanship, teammanship. And you know, when you're rolling around trying to get your opposition sent off, I just don't ring right, and it isn't the right signal for anybody, is it?
Let's move on very quickly. Corruption, Otbed. Straight away, and I'm going to kind of reflect what I read, so I'm not personally going to offer an opinion on this, but to chuck it out there, because I will then offer an opinion as we start to get into the debate. But I'm going to say VAR.
Well, we got one Saturday, didn't we? With Ryan Yates, we finally got a decision our way.
But you know,
I'm not a fan of it, because there's that many times over the last couple of years we jumped up, we're celebrating, we're jumping round, and then we turn around, sit down, and it's gone to VAR. You know, and you've got to wait 3 or 4 minutes. And then you've lost it, you know, and you don't know whether it's going to be a goal or not a goal. You know, I just don't like it.
Gary, we go to football for that precious moment.
That moment.
When the ball hits the back of the net, is that precious moment that we all absolutely love and bought into. And VAR takes that away. You know, our time in the Premier League, to be fair, we had several years in the Premier League. And in the end, it got to so many ridiculous things going on that
you stop jumping up, don't you?
Is it a goal? Isn't it? It's like when you get a penalty, you cheer, but it ain't like that moment when it hits the back of the net. So they're taking the most wonderful element of football is that euphoria of a fan when it's the back of the net, and VAR takes that away. But also, when we talk about corruption and VAR is what you said there, Paul. If the amount of mistakes that are made by VAR, and some of them are so horrendous, VAR, I don't think we see as much problem in the continent. I think VAR works a lot better abroad than it does in this country. There's so many errors. How do they make these errors? They have got every angle. They have got every little bit of lineage and everything else that they need technically to get that absolutely bang on. So what is the point of VAR if the humans watching it with all the technology at their feet can't make the right decision? And you have to say, how do they not make the right decision? So is that corruption? I don't think
they're making so many mistakes in cricket, do you? Tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Well, I don't think they make as many mistakes in football abroad either. I think VAR works a lot better abroad. I hate VAR. I genuinely detest VAR.
I'm not a fan because of what you just said, Gary. It takes that magic moment away.
Of course it does. Absolutely takes it away. And we look at what happened in the semi-final. I mean, what a wonderful, wonderful occasion that would have been. Coventry getting that goal. What an amazing comeback. And what was it, a toenail?
Toenail, I don't get it, a toenail.
So here's the other point, and this is a great one, Paul, for you. Now, that was a toenail. Now, originally when VAR came out, VAR was not to interfere with the game. It was to support the referee. If the referee wasn't sure of his decision, he could call on VAR. In that game, VAR intervened. There is no way on God's earth the ref could have called that or the linesman. And in days gone by, it's always the benefit is given to the attacking player. If it's that marginal, you know. So you've got to question, why did VAR jump in when originally VAR's there as an assistant to the referee? When the referee didn't disallow, and I think the linesman didn't flag.
Is it tied in, or is this being me being too neat and tidy and nice and convenient? Is it tied into the money in the game? Be really interesting to see what the stats are in terms of decisions given to the Super Six that we've alluded to in this this podcast conversation versus the teams at the bottom end. Who gets the fairer rub of the green? Now, I'll say again, guys, I don't go to the games like, because I live abroad, as you know. I don't go to the games, so I can't comment personally. But I read a lot of stuff. I read a lot of feedback. I speak to guys such as yourself. And the overwhelming evidence, overwhelming, it's not even slight, it's overwhelming, is it's bent as a corkscrew in favour of the rich, unquote.
I think, Paul, to be honest with you, the amount of money involved in the Premier League, the amount of money involved in a certain group of clubs in the Premier League, when there's that sort of money around and corruption can be easily introduced into that sport, we know that. There's been corruption forever and a day, probably, but now with the levels of money involved in the game, wherever there's that sort of money, you're always going to have an element or a definite fear of there would be people trying to be corrupt. And it don't, that ain't just football, is it? Anything no. where you've got that level of money involved in that sort of situation, there's always going to be the danger that there could be corruption. Now, whether there is or not, we can't honestly sit here and say, right? We can say, well, you know, VAR's done this, it's done that. But it's very simple. We can't say because we don't know for sure. Whether we ever will, it doesn't matter. Overwhelmingly, we can suggest or surmise, but the fact is, doesn't matter what we say, anybody says, at that sort of level, with that sort of money involved, there's always the danger that there'll be corruption. And that is in anything, isn't it? When there's big money, there are big crooks.
Yeah, that's it's cliched, but it's true. Well, it's cliched for a reason, isn't it? It's cliched for a reason. So, you know, kind of bringing it full circle, you know, we've had a brief flirt with the cash situation. We'd have a brief flirt with the culture and the cheating, and also just touched on the corruption and the VAR. You know, I mean, this whole kind of nonsense about fair play and sustainability. And I'm being polite when I say nonsense. I mean, it's ludicrous, isn't it, that, you know, you've got certain clubs that have flouted the laws and have done for years, not even remotely being brought to book, you know, and at the risk of being divisive and oversimplistic, it's the clubs at the bottom, the small boys, if you will, that are taking the hits. The big boys that yet again are getting away with it. I mean, yet again, from a perception of a sport that we bring our young people into, our kids, our grandkids, what kind of message? You know, for me, the overriding message here with professional football at an elite level, I can't speak too much to the lower leagues because, like I say, my finger's off the pulse. But it's okay to cheat. That kind of sends the message out, whether it's on the pitch or off. Just do what you want because we can. That arrogance, that cheating. I mean, it's just horrible in the extreme, isn't it?
Manchester City is a fine example, isn't it, really? Mm. 115 allegations of financial irregularities. Many clubs have been penalised for a lot less. You know, clubs have been destroyed. All right. I'm not a fan of Luton, obviously, but fair play to them. They've come from non-league and got back up there. But the reason they was in non-league was because they got absolutely destroyed by the FA with penalties. I think Bolton as well.
Derby,
Reading. They come a conqueror of all this. You know, I know Everton have been hammered twice this year. You've been hammered, Forest. And yet still, after what, 2 or 3 years of 115 allegations against Man City, nothing has been done.
How can Forest compete if they can't spend a bit? I know that they've always overstepped the line, but how can you not compete if, you know, they was given that promotion money and we had 23 players leave the club and we had no team, basically. So we had to spend.
Yeah, Gary,
you know, stay in the league.
I don't know if you're aware. I'm led to believe they are bringing out a new fair play ruling.
I believe
it's based the expenditure is based on the lowest income of the side in the Premier League. Now, that would be quite a revelation if that was to happen. Because who would that be right now? Luton Town. Luton Town ain't got a lot of money. So how would Man United work with that? Or Arsenal. I'm not sure the ins and outs of this, and I've listened to the professional pundits, and they don't really know, so I'm not going to know. But that is what is on the table from what I can make out, which is quite a game changer in some respects. But again, how can that work when you've got the likes of Luton Town or Bournemouth? More Luton, really. Bournemouth have got money behind them, people don't realise. But certainly you're going to get clubs that are going to pop up there every now and again. The fluke clubs that you know, go through that don't have a lot of income. Well, you can't, you won't be able to operate the Premier League like that, would you? I can't see it.
It shows me what the Premier League really think of the Nottingham Forest and the Evertons when they come out with that statement. When they brought the charges against us, the boss of the Premier League, who hasn't, in my book, you know, he hasn't got a scooby-doo about football or anything. He called Nottingham Forest, I think, Everton, little clubs.
That's your answer then, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what they think about the Nottingham Forest, the Evertons, the Lutons, the Burmans. That's what they think of them.
You're there just to make the numbers up.
That's right.
You know, I remember.
Well, I think, Gary, you're right. They're going to break
away.
They
made the numbers up, and that's it's all about a certain group of clubs.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard as well. I mean, obviously, you've got this Hollywood situation with Wrexham, but I don't know if this is out yet, but I have heard through the grapevine, it may be out, that Will Farrell is now investing in Leeds United.
Well, I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, well, it might not be out yet. It might not be on general release, but I've heard that it's come from a very good source as well, a very good source. But Will Farrell is going to be investing in Leeds because he's been attending some of these Wrexham games, and all these actors are getting a bit excited. And that leads me on to one thing, Paul, and just to fire a question at you two guys. What are your thoughts, again, I say this word, betrayal of the fans, of the Americans wanting to, you spoke about it being played in Bangkok earlier, but the Americans are now trying to get at least two Premier League games of the opening day of the season played out in America. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not, but I don't surprise.
Yeah, that is actually being tabled. They're trying to get that through at the moment.
Well, that will happen.
Whether they will or not, I don't know.
I think it will happen.
Betrayal.
It will happen. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
You can see it's going to happen.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that, Paul?
My personal thoughts are we're talking grassroots. The game belongs to the people. It's a British game. So if you're registered in an English league, you play in England or Wales. If you're registered in Scotland, you play in Scotland. You know, football stays at home, whether you're on the local park or whether you're in one of your professional clubs. But it's inevitable, as Gary C's alluded to, it's absolutely inevitable that that's going to happen. And it brings us right back, as it invariably does, to one thing again, money.
Money.
Cash.
And that is the ultimate betrayal of their fans. Because whether you are a fan of these top six, seven clubs, you want, on the opening day of the season, well, any game, but the opening day of the season particularly, you want to be at your game. You want to be at Old Trafford, at the Emirates, wherever it is. You want to be there to see your team play Chelsea or play Spurs or Everton or whatever. You want to be there. That's where you want to be. Well, you're not going to be able to be there, unless you're rich.
What they're going to do? What they're going to do with the season ticket holders? Offering free flights.
They'll probably say, I'm going to be honest, and I'm going to be sarcastic with this.
So you get a bit of discount on your first 2K.
They'll just say, oh, look, what we're going to do, because you're going to miss out on two games this season, because we're going to play them in out of Mongolia. Do you know what? We won't put the prices up. We'll just keep them as they were last year.
Yeah.
That's what they do, greedy sods.
Yeah. Unbelievable, isn't it? Absolutely unbelievable. So it's just the way the game's going. I said this about 4 or 5 years ago. This is the way it's going to go. And it's going to happen. It'll happen. I mean, I said it'll happen in 5 years when I was talking to Paul during COVID. I think it's only about another couple of years away now, a year away.
Yeah.
I think I'd agree with that. You know, you're out of the country games, your pre-season games. Yeah, look forward to them. You know, Forest playing in Spain. Used to love that pre-season.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're on the booze with the boys kind of thing. Yeah, you're in the sun, your team's there, whether you win, lose, or draw, you don't care. Siesta. But there's all the difference in the world, isn't there, between that pre-season.
It's all right up on a plane to Spain for the weekend, isn't it? It's not so bad. You know what I mean?
That's
not where they're going, is it? Yeah,
they're
going to Australia and Tokyo, and
they're going to be going out to Dubai.
Yeah. I know. I'm not hopping on a plane to Tokyo for the weekend.
Exactly. You know what? All I can say to the fans out there, I feel sorry for the big club fans. And look, you'll always love your club. You always will. But it is time that you take a long, hard look at your local club, be it non-league, League One, League Two, even Championship, I guess. Look at your local clubs, get down and give them the support because they deserve it. And I'm afraid your clubs necessarily don't. You're no longer a fan, you're a customer. Go look at what you've got around you. There is so many clubs with some really fantastic little stadiums that, you know, especially for the old school lads, the stadiums will bring back you a lot of memories. It's as near as you're going to get, you know. So that's my view is it's time for a bit of soul searching. Always love your club. I'm not saying don't love your club, but your club doesn't necessarily love you. So I'll give you an example.
Charlie, my son's been to a couple of Mansfield home games. He's been probably about four or five this season. He tries to get one. We'll go down to Field Mill, or the One Call Stadium, as I call it, on a Tuesday night if we've got nothing on. I couldn't go to the last two Tuesday night games because Carlton were playing. But my lad went, and he's going to get season ticket this season, £100 it is. He said, Dad, if I only use it eight times, you know, the night games I'll go to. He's old enough to start going on his own with a couple of his mates.
Where was that, Gary?
At Mansfield.
Oh, I've been there, yeah.
He wants a season ticket, so they're £100. So we're going to get him one. He might do about eight games, but he'll get his money back.
Yeah, get your money back.
He enjoys going down there. The atmosphere is good.
It's,
you know, and he's going to go. I'm going to get him a season ticket. And it's like I said, I heard him for the first time, say this weekend, Dad, I'm not so bothered about the away games next year. And I think he's going to go to a few more Mansfield games. And this is the danger they've got now. They're going to lose that next generation. They're going to go to the Notts Counties and the Mansfield Towns, and hopefully the Carlton Towns and the non-league. You know, so it's about a bit of a bonus for the low-end clubs.
Non-league is on the up, Gal, with attendance.
Oh, yeah, we've seen the attendance that stopped in the other night against this.
This weekend, had a lot of playoffs, and the crowds have been phenomenal.
Unbelievable. Big crowds,
big, brilliant, you know, brilliant atmospheres, pitch invasions. It's as good as supporting any other club if you look. And if it's your local club, truly part of your community, you know, which is what football clubs are all about. It was part of your community. You know, Nottingham Forest back in the day, Forest would have been, you know, and County would have been massive part of that community. It would have shaped a lot of your lives. It shaped yours. Football shaped mine, you know, but it wouldn't now. Unfortunately,
I think Forest are going to move myself, partly because of the councils arguing over certain stuff. I think the owner's had enough now, and I think he wants his own stadium, 60,000. I can see that in one way, because to compete and try and keep up with this so-called top six, we need a bigger ground.
Because you've got the fan base to fill it, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. We have, without a doubt. And I know, I can see the point. It's not going to affect me. It's a lot of people, Charlie's children, and I never probably, if they do move in 5 years, build a new stadium, Charlie's children aren't going to, you know, you got to think of the future. I can see that point of view and getting the extra revenue and 60,000 in. I can see that argument, that side of things, but
Watch the atmosphere dip. You listen to the West Ham fans, and they'll all tell you.
It's going to go that way. I mean, they said they want something to, something like the City Ground, but you're not going to get that. They're on about Toten, just off the M1, where the tram terminus is already there. The infrastructure's in for the transport. It's probably 15 minutes, 20 minutes on outside the city centre. But you're not next to the River Trent. what's going to happen to the local businesses? You know, you're next to the cricket ground. It's one of the most beautiful settings in the world for a football stadium. You know, you're going to get 60,000 in the
people
middle of
nowhere. People don't realise, right, Gary, because especially the pubs, there are pubs that survive on football alone.
That's right.
A
lot of these pubs spent money. Just by spending in the Premier League, they've spent a hell of a lot of money getting these pubs up, making them into fan zones.
Sorry, mate. I was talking to a pub landlord who he had an inn on like bed, rooms at top. We went down to Southampton, go down for the weekend for the game. And I was chatting away to the landlord, and it was opposite the Dell. They've still got a bit of wall there or something. And Dell, what a shithole that was, though, wasn't it? But anyway.
Yeah, but I loved it, didn't you?
Oh, it was, that was mad. But anyway, and he said that he survives because he's got the B&B and all that as well, a bit of a hotel type thing. But he said that the other pubs around him, they would take in one day a month's worth of money taking now. And a lot of pubs will go out of business over it. West Ham, I think a lot of pubs, in a lot of businesses, food, catering businesses, pubs, they all went out of business when they moved that to Stratford.
Yeah. I mean, we're quite lucky in Nottingham. There's still, well, they're going to lose a lot of money if Forest move, but you've still got the cricket ground, you've still got Notts County, and you've still got the ice arena. And you've still got the dogs and the horse racing track. And you're quite close to the city centre there as well. So, but it's still going to be a big hit if Forest move. Yeah. You know, a lot of people have invested a lot of money in these bars, especially since they got to the Premier League.
I think what we've done there, guys, we've kind of danced all over. We've been all over the metaphoric football pitch. You know, we've touched on the cash, we've touched on the culture, we've touched on the corruption. Hopefully, we've lit some kind of touch paper. And I just want to bring this to a close, if I may, by a quote from an American anthropologist called Margaret Mead. And I asked this question right at the top of this fascinating dialogue. So thank you, gentlemen, very, very much indeed for your practical insights, because I think it's easy for people like me to sit from afar, read stuff and think they're an expert. You are the guys on the terraces week in, week out. You are the guys that are in touch with people that really matter, where the game belongs. People on the terraces, the youngsters, the future. Gary's alluded to his son. You know, we can all relate to our grandson, our granddaughter, whatever it may be. But Margaret Mead said this, and I believe this to be true in any walk of life, including football. And she said, never doubt that a small group of committed, passionate individuals can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. Now, that's been a massive inspiration for me personally. So I just kind of my summary on this, and Gary H, you've kind of given yours around, you know, go and support your local club. Fantastic advice. Fantastic. Bring the game back to the people. But my take upon this is the voice that you've got, Gary, and your amazing following, the voice that you've got, Gary C, with your amazing following, why don't we all come together around the world and create one voice and speak out against all these issues? Because from my understanding, everybody's speaking out, but it's fractured. We need a collective voice to bring it together, to put the pressure on. That's my thoughts. But gentlemen, I want to thank you again for an amazing conversation. And as I say, sharing your insights that are real, not theoretical, they're real. Because you deal with this week in, week out, with the people that really matter. And I'm going to sign off, gentlemen, the way I always do, by saying, remember, the world's changing. How will you respond?
Thanks very much for listening to this World Game Changers podcast episode. Hopefully you found it interesting and helpful. Drop a line to paul@worldgamechangers.org with any thoughts or questions you may have, and he'll be more than happy to respond. Remember, the world's changing. How will you respond?